Hi, it's DGAF. And this is season 4 of Sessions. Let's get it this year. Let's save the princess, right? Week 19 of 50, I Don't Belong, the Brandon Shaq Harris interview. And I didn't write anything for this one. I wanted a more raw interview, no introduction. So, yeah. Brandon, how you doing, man?
Doing good. It's nice to catch up.
It is nice to catch up. It was nice to be up in your place at Panorama Towers in Las Vegas. When I messaged you about doing this, you have some ideas about what you want to talk about today?
Yeah, I thought it might be good to kind of talk about, I suppose, I've seen you from like the 2+2 stuff, like way back in the day. I've seen like the Iceman DJF tag and whatever. And, you know, I remember stumbling across your blog a little bit. And I remember seeing something on Twitter when I was moving into Pano, and by the time I had moved into Pano, which was, early 2020, like right when everything was shutting down.
Yeah.
I was just looking for like content to listen to because I was, you know, doing moving stuff, and Podcasts tend to be my thing. And I noticed something about you discussing, you know, your third rise and into high stakes.
Where'd you hear about it?
On Twitter. I was just looking on Twitter.
Oh, you
or
just
whatever.
Saw it?
Like X amount of my friends liked this thing or whatever.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, I know this name or whatever. And I'm like, let's check this one out. And I listened to it.
Yeah.
And initially... Well, there are a few things, I suppose. The parallel of somebody who was playing nosebleeds at the Commerce, no less, which I can relate to, although we have contrasting relationship with the Commerce.
Yeah, I love it. You hate it.
Yeah. I actually have a lot of like really good song, like sense memories when it comes to like the songs I've listened to as I've like taken the ride home of shame.
Yeah.
Like I have more references of songs, like I'll turn on, like there's a song called Limo Wreck by Soundgarden.
Uh-huh.
And it'll come on and I'll flash back to like Leaving the Commerce Bust, or like I have a lot of these like half of the songs that like reference something else are like songs that reference me leaving like Bust from
Yeah,
Commerce.
It's crazy how like a good song will bring you back to whenever you heard it, right?
Yeah. And that actually makes me smile because they're like good fucking songs. And Commerce isn't going to ruin that shit for me. Anyway, so...
I wonder if, before we go... So, you don't like Commerce. I love it. And I wonder what percentage of that is. I actually ran hot at Commerce in my time there overall, for sure.
Okay.
Right? I didn't really run bad there, like much at all. And it sounds like you might have, or you did.
I definitely did. And I don't know how much of that is like attributed to, I feel like my temperament like doesn't really influence my play that much. I've never drank, which is sort of like a product of my childhood, I guess. So I don't like, you know, I don't get pissed off and like get drunk and like fucking rage on people. But my main issue with the Commerce is just that the players have so much flexibility, as you know, which is something that you really like.
Mm-hmm.
But they kind of they that entitlement is kind of at the expense of the dealers, and I don't know. I call it the circle of apathy. I think like the dealers hate the players, and the players hate the dealers, and the floor kind of hates the dealers, and so the dealers hate the floor, and the floor is just, they just side with the players, and the players hook the floor up like super fucking good there.
Yeah.
So I feel like the dealers don't do the best job because they don't give a fuck about the players, and the players are super abusive to the dealers.
Right.
And I can't stand bullying.
Right.
And it just puts me in a really bad mood. And so like that entitlement mixed, the general entitlement mixed with like fucking whiny, you know, poker players when they lose, especially mixed game players, because they do their fucking like their little requiems where they grab all seven of their cards and you stare at it for like right. 5 minutes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Before they like fling them into like the female dealer's face and like mad dog them. Mm-hmm. I just can't fucking take it.
Yeah, that's...
So I think that's like the major point of contention for me. Otherwise, like, yeah, I mean, like, the food situation's good, and, you know, you can pretty much, as you know, well, in mixed games, I suppose, it'll go from, we're playing 400, 800 limit mix, and it'll be these games, and then so-and-so will show up. That's the first time I think I've heard a VIP called a producer, I suppose.
Mm.
The Commerce, very L.A.
Yeah.
The producer will show up, and then an extra
seat. Is it an actual producer, or that's just what you guys call them in the mixed game?
Oh, you haven't heard that one yet?
No.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, oftentimes it is an actual producer in Hollywood.
Yeah, sure. actually, it's really interesting because there is one producer, but it's like when they would say it, it wasn't him.
Oh, okay.
When I would hear it, it was this guy I would call Caveman.
Someone who produces a good game.
Yes. Yeah, good. You landed on it before. I never realized that until now. Thank you. So it goes from your seven-handed 400, 800, 10-game mix to now we're playing like double the stakes and we're adding a chair. He gets to skip the list. And now it's like 15 new games that, and, you know, half of which I've never played. Like, it's the ones that the LA guys have been playing together all the time. Right. So, yeah, they're very, like, amenable in that sense. So it's exciting, I guess. But, yeah, I just can't take the abuse and the apathy. It, like, as a person who's really sensitive to these kind of things, it just, like, fucking... It's like a drag to me.
Yeah, I wonder why it didn't bother me as much. Maybe in the No Limit, there isn't as much of that. Mm. So you alluded to... Would you say you're a mixed game player, like, primarily?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you have a bracelet in PLO, don't you?
Yeah. But, like, do those count, really? Like, does a PLO bracelet, like, really count?
They count, man.
Okay.
People, don't squash people's dreams, man. That's what I usually do. I was expecting... So, let's talk about... How many bracelets do you have?
I have two, and they're both in PLO.
Both in PLO.
Yeah, I've got some close calls and some other ones.
But PLO is such a different game than, like, mixed games.
Yeah.
Like, those are very, like... They're
totally different.
It's fixed betting, and it's just...
Yeah, and typically the PLO games in a mixed environment will be, like, capped at, like, you know, 40 bets or 30 bets or something like that, and... I don't know, it's just weird. I just tend, like, PLO is a game that feels really natural to me and something that I feel like I play differently, and I, like, visualize it differently, I suppose.
PLO is included in the mix oftentimes?
Typically, no, not so much.
Okay.
Depends. It's like in the, there's an 8160 that runs all the time here, and usually it'll be like a big O kind of thing
that's
included in those.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I know you've been getting in those, like, big O streets lately, and I sent you some big O hands.
You're good at it, man. Well, I actually could be okay at it, but I don't have any patience to, like, wait for the good hands, so it's, like, it's brutal.
But that's the thing. You don't really need to. People think you need to, but you don't really need to. You just need to know how much to commit to the not-so-good hands.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But my ADD just makes me want to play something where the game changes, like, every eight hands. So I typically just... wind up picking the mixed over, like, a PLO thing. And also the communal aesthetic kind of is a thing for me where it's something that it was a learning experience for me, really, because I enjoy communities, which is, you know, another thing that makes me relate to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there was a point in Chicago where our mixed community was so small, I hated the idea of like beating up on my friends, and I also didn't want to lose, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
it's tough.
It's like a major conflict of interest. Like, I'm not a professional poker player by design, for sure. Like, I will always take the worst of it, and like, I'll always put my friendships before the game and these kind of things.
Well, that doesn't make you not a professional poker
player. Yeah, but it makes you a spot until you learn how to balance like these kind of things and not be taken advantage of or what.
Yeah, you know. I've been taken advantage of a bunch.
Sure.
Not usually in poker games, but in like everything else.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely a good spot for that. So when I moved to California, I thought like this might be a good experience to, or like, I'm like, okay, cool, I can play with a new group of people who I don't really know, and I can just like eyes on the prize and grind. And then I quickly realized that like something came up where like I'm a fucking moron. Like, I was playing like a deuce hand, and I thought it was like I played it in a really weird way, where the person who was opening, I'm trying to go through it all, I guess, but the person who was opening was really loose, and I was going to exploit that. And then
what game was this?
This is a triple draw,
deuce to seven.
Yes.
Okay.
And then so it was like hijack opened, I threw that button, and then the small blind cold called. And
what was your hand? Do you remember?
Sure. Okay. I guess I'll get into it.
Yeah, so, let's do a hand, and then we'll get like a quick life story, and then talk about whatever else you want to talk about. Yeah.
Would it be okay if I could I do the thing?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. All right, cool. Yeah, let's do that. But if I could just take a sip real quick.
Take a sip.
I'm going to take a sip of this flat water in a miniature baseball bat Pellegrino bottle that's been refrigerated to make it nice and cold.
Perfect. Right. And I took a sip of Coors Light because
beautiful.
You live pretty high up, and I'm scared as hell of heights, so I had to bring a beer up here with me.
Okay. We almost did this outside, but
yeah, but I was getting a little boozy when we tried to set up out there. So let's hear the hand, and then let's get a life story, and then I want to ask you about like my premise for this week.
Sure.
And see what you think about it.
Okay. It's so weird because there are like so many unfinished tangents already. Like one.
That's good. It makes it good for the listener, I believe.
Oh, it's so brutal. No, my friends call me the historian because I like want to go. Veronica calls me the historian because I want to backtrack through every tangent and like tie a ribbon on it. You know what I mean?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think people like tangents, and I got in mind a couple things that I know we're gonna get to.
I know you're a pro.
No, I'm not a pro, man. I'm learning as I go. But
okay, so this hand. So this guy has been extremely out of line and pre, and also like really foldy post. Opens the cutoff, and I have like I have a really garbage hand with good blockers or something. I think it was something like 8-8-7-7-3 or something like that. So having the extra 8 and the extra 7 is nice. Mm-hmm. You know, typically you do want to have a deuce, but like any hand that I make is going to be really rough. No. Was it that? All right, let's run with this.
What if you had three deuces? Would that be like legit to like go bananas with?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, okay. It sort of depends. Because when it like people's ranges obviously expand like in later positions or whatever. If you have three deuces and like early position opens, like they probably have a deuce in their hand. Right. So like maybe you want to have
first button, right?
Yeah. So cutoff has like a few more like 3-8-6 and these kind of things or whatever. And I'm wrong. My hand was actually it was 8-8-7-6-5. So I have an open ender, or as we call it in our game. I have a hose pipe to a pride parade.
A
hose pipe. Yeah. Oh, okay. A hose pipe is an open ender, and a pride parade is a straight.
Okay.
We have we've got like a super expansive vernacular for our poker things.
Certainly. That's I don't great. Even follow that one.
Yeah.
A pride parade is not straight.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm just taking it. We're taking it back.
Okay.
So I have I have 8-8, so I have two spider's legs, a 7, 7 dust, right, a 6 titty, and a backseat bingo, which is 5.
Okay. And a 4.
No, because I have...
Oh, yeah, 5, 6, yeah, 7, 8, 8. Okay.
So open, I 3-bet, small blind cold calls, which I was not expecting, and then hijack calls. And then my plan was, if I made, like... I was,
the opener called?
Yeah.
The opener called.
Okay. Opener takes 3, yeah. I take 1. Small blind takes 2.
Which ones did you get rid of?
Or small blind, what's that?
Did you try and make an 8?
So I had 8-7. I had 8-7-6-5.
Did you get rid of an 8 to try and make a low?
I mean, like I could. Well, yeah, I definitely got rid of the 8, and I could like also get rid of the 7 if I wanted to and like draw smoother.
Right.
But my plan was just kind of just to snow. Yeah. And snowing is if I catch a card, say I catch another 8. And it checks to me, I'm going to bet, and then I'm going to keep all 5 of my cards to pretend that I actually have a good hand when right. I don't have a good hand.
Yes.
So snowing is bluffing in a draw game where you stay pat or you don't throw away any cards. You keep the cards that you have and you pretend you have a hand. So I could get rid of the 7 and get rid of an 8. So I have like a smoother draw to an 8. Instead of like drawing to a fucking straight, and a straight is like if you have a straight, that's worse than any pairs that you right. can have. So straights.
That's why I was horrible. Wondering if you were drawing with the 5, 6, 7, 8. The hose pipe to the pride parade.
Yeah. So I'm just decided I'm gonna snow. Okay. Because I feel like this guy overfolds a bunch, and then like the small blind is an older pro that I recognize, but he's out of position, and like I'm just gonna put a lot of pressure on him, and also I block a card that he might need.
Right.
So I decided to take this line. There are a lot of different ways I can play this hand, but this is the way I played it. So I just threw away an 8. If I make like if I hit like a 3 or a deuce, then I have a rough 8, and that's great. And anything else, I'm just going to snow like immediately and try to like put max pressure on and get a bunch.
You get a king, you're just tapping the table next time.
Yeah. I'm just keeping it. So I catch a jack. So it goes, so small blind draws 2, cutoff draws 3, which is not very good unless you have like a bunch of blockers.
He drew 3 the first time?
Yeah. And then I drew 1. It goes check, I bet, call, draw 2 again. Oh, no, he folds right away. The cutoff folds right away, okay. Which is why I'm in the pot in the first place. Because he'll, like, put in a bunch of action loose. And then, like, he should always be calling here. He should always be calling a small bet and maybe folding some turns. So he folds right away. I pat my hand. I hit a jack. So I have something that, like, shows down okay. I have a rough jack.
If the other guy pairs up or whatever.
Yeah. So, so he draws 2. I pat. He checks, I bet, he calls. He draws 2. I pat. He checks, I bet, he calls. And then he draws 1. And I pat. And my plan here, like, typically when it checks here, you just check behind because a jack is a favorite against a draw 1.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't want them to see what I'm doing at all. So there's some incentive sometimes when you're like a new guy playing and whatever, like just to bet, even if like you never get called unless you're beat.
Yeah.
Sometimes like you want to bet and just not turn your hand over. Cause
how many dollars is this? Are you paying for this like privacy? What game was it?
I think it was like 100-200 mix. So it's like $200 bet. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just worth it because I'm going to keep kind of doing this move against people as much as I can. Like, I just never want to turn my hand over. I don't want them to see that I'm capable of this or whatever. So, so he checks, I bet. And then he draws or something. I didn't look at – I wasn't – when he called, I wasn't sure I wasn't sure if this was the last draw or not.
Okay. It is confusing, the triple draw.
Well, people, like, usually the dealer will drop the deck.
Yeah.
After when the draws are complete, they drop the deck and they spread the stub or whatever.
Yeah.
And so you know that the hand's over. Or you can reference the amount of burn cards. Like if 3 burn cards are out, then the hand's over. But I didn't do that. So, and the dealer was holding the fucking deck. So I bet, and he called, and it was the last draw. So he was calling. But I didn't want, I wasn't sure if it was the last draw or not because the dealer was fucking holding the deck. And I could have just asked.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, what I don't want to do is turn my hand over.
Right.
And then there's one more draw still and he can see what he has to beat.
Right.
Like I'm sitting here with like a fucking jack eight or whatever.
Yeah.
So he calls my bet and he stays there and I go pat again. I'm assuming he's pat and now I'm just going to like pat behind if there are. If there is still one more draw,
yeah.
And then if he checks, I'm gonna bet and try to bluff or whatever. I don't know.
Right.
So I pat, but the hand's over, and he just turns the hand over, and he called me with like.
It looks like you're checking.
Yeah. It looks like he thinks I'm saying like he thinks I'm saying you're good, dude.
Oh.
Like, instead of and, like the pat motion and like.
What does he turn you're over? Good, dude.
He turns over a king.
Oh.
And as soon as he turns over here, I'm like, oh, no, I'm sorry, I wasn't sure if it was the last draw.
Accidental slow roll, yeah.
Yeah. And so he thought I was bluffing, but he called me with worse.
Yeah.
And people don't usually do what I do with my hand.
Right.
So, like, he rates to beat hands that I do usually snow with, but not in, I did it this way for the reasons I told you. And he's like, no, you just thought, like, you just thought I for sure had you beat. And I'm like, no, you don't. Like, I could have just gone with that and been like,
yeah,
you know, whatever. But, like, I wanted him to know, like, how big of, like, a fucking idiot I am. And I'm like, no, dude, I'm just, like, so tired. And, like, honestly, I didn't realize it was the last draw. And I didn't want to turn my hand over. And he's like, you fucking angle shooters, blah, blah, blah. And that, like, right then I kind of realized, like,
oh. Welcome to commerce.
Like, I'm in a new place. Like, these people don't know me. There's not, like, a like, they don't have, like, that notes over my head that says like Brandon's a good person, he's ethical person, wouldn't, you know, just a kind of a moron. People assume because like
who was this guy? Let's out him.
Nah.
You don't want
to? Nah, he's a nice guy. And we, you know, we sorted it out later. But that was kind of like, and then I also, so the point of the story was that like I thought I wanted to be away from like my old friend group or whatever and go into this place where I didn't know anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized that like my reputation isn't understood here and I have to like redevelop my reputation. And also no matter what, I'm still going to try to be friends with these motherfuckers because that's just like how I am.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just a communal person by nature. So anyways, that's like the very long version of a short point, I guess, is that like typically I play mixed games because it's a smaller, tight-knit community, and I like that aspect. And also I like when the game changes every hands, but I should probably just play PLO, really.
Yeah. So when I said it cost you $200 to protect your information, but that's not even true because a lot of times they fold and occasionally sometimes they call and you win. So it like cost you like very little to bet in a spot where most people would check.
Well, yeah, and also, like, sometimes they fold, like, there's merit to betting this jack, too. Some people will fold a better jack, and some people will fold a better 10, and they'll call me with, like, a 9, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
okay. It's like, people, like, my line is fucking strong. I stayed pat, like, right, like, in a 3-way hand, I stayed pat straight from the beginning, put in all the money, and, like, this rates to be a good hand. So, like, you know, a lot of people will fold a better jack than mine, or a 10, and then, like, they'll side call with, like, a 9, and they'll for sure call with an 8. You know, so like I do get better hands to fold some of the time, but I also get to protect my.
But if you didn't care what people about the information, you said you would have checked on purpose.
When people start understanding your game a little bit more, like, and they're, you know, if they know I bet this, they might be raising me a little bit lighter.
Yeah.
If they know they can start raising like thinner against me, then I'm more inclined to pick and choose. When I'm betting hands like this, it's more of like an exploit against people who are going to like, who are either going to overfold like super early in hands, like dude, like the cutoff did, like, which I really wanted. Like the reason I was in the hand with my shit fucking hand in the first place was because like, I knew he draws like a bunch of cards and he'll fold like right away.
Is he getting like 14-1 on that when he folded?
I don't want to think about it, but yeah, something
like
that.
Well, wasn't it 3-bet, which means 2 bets each. And it's 3 of you. That's
why are you making me do this? So 7.5 bets pre, and then like
I'm not even counting the big blind.
I didn't even count the big blind either. Yeah,
but so, you bet like 100, and he folded, right?
Yeah. So he's getting like 10 or 11 to 1 or something like that. Yeah, wow. He's getting a major price like to call, so you should always be calling here.
Those are crazy games.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was weird.
So let's... You moved out here to Vegas at the beginning of the pandemic. How old are you?
I just turned 40.
Just turned 40?
Yeah.
Man, that's old as shit.
I know, dude. We're fucking dinosaurs.
Oh, my God. No wonder you play these weird games. No, I'm just kidding.
It was fun being like a fucking 18-year-old playing stud, you know, when I first went to Bellagio. But right. Like, here I am now. I'm 20 years away from wearing that, like, number one grandpa pat, like, you know, pin.
So you moved here. You're from Chicago, but you lived in California for a while. Where did you move here from?
My ex at the time, so she moved to Chicago with me I was living in Chicago already. She moved from Vegas to Chicago in 2014 and then wanted to move to LA to pursue like modeling and acting. So we moved to LA like middle of 2015, I think, and then we moved to Vegas like 2017, I think.
Yeah. Oh, so you were living somewhere else in Vegas before you moved to Panorama?
Yeah, we lived in Summerlin for a little bit, and then we lived like Sahara and Torrey Pines or something like that for a little bit. So we lived a couple of years, two and a half years before I moved to Panama, yeah.
And you lived in San Diego, North County San Diego, for a while growing up, right?
Yeah, good memory.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you lived where I live.
San Marcos, San Escondido and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
And when did you start playing poker? And how the fuck did you get into mixed games?
Like, poker was nothing I ever thought I would play, to be honest. I didn't really...
You're a musician at heart.
Yeah, that's what I figured I would just do music, I guess. And I had built like a pretty large networking group and I was practicing a lot. And then I've written about this story like pretty comprehensively, I suppose. And it's super fucking long.
Where can people find your writing?
So I think if you type in my full name, BrandonShackHarris.com/muse, it should, the whole Muse story should come up. But you can also, like, if you go to like that website, you can do BrandonShackHarris.com, and if that's too long, you can do WorldSeriesOfDickSucking.com.
WorldSeriesOfDickSucking.com?
Yeah, yeah.
And did you buy that?
I did.
Whatever it's called? Okay, good.
Or .net. I have both. World Series of Dick Sucking unlocked, dude.
Why didn't you get .org?
I know. I don't know. I think competition is healthy, you know? So if someone wants to
that's
make
smart.
A program.
That's smart.
Yeah, yeah, you know, by all means. If someone wants to make a competitor.
So you put the $12 in to buy those?
Yeah, yeah, nice. That's great. Just, my name is annoying, you know what I mean? I figured that might be, like, an easier one to remember. But, yeah, hyperlinks to my site. So, like, if you go to, like, the facts part, it'll be like, how you learn about poker, like, and it's, like, a Muse story, and it's, like, tell me, can I read more? And you just click the thing.
Cool. But that's good that you have that you've done so much writing, so we don't have to, like, we can spend time on other stuff besides life story. I think it's, like, a good way to get people to go read your life story.
Yeah.
Like all your stuff there, and I'm just gonna tell the people that so it's a high rise in Las Vegas, and you know I'm looking out the window at the Aria, and in his apartment is a piano and like what is that, like a half stack or is that an amp or what
yeah,
is that
yeah thing? Yeah yeah like they've got two big amp heads and like these are cabinets yeah
so. And it's just a very cool, the way you decorated it, there's umbrellas all over the ceiling. It's pretty cool, man. So you are an artist at heart. There's no question. But how did you find your way into poker?
You're an artist at heart, too. I love the writing and the podcast and the music, and you do the music.
Yeah, I'm an artist at heart.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
But I'm just, and I'm not even a poker player aside from No Limit Hold'em. Like, all those games that you play, I don't have any...
Oh, you're playing the other shit. I've listened to you, like, kind of talk through some of your thought process. I'm like, okay, he knows what he's talking about.
I can figure out, like, what to do, but, like, it just doesn't appeal to me. I just like bluffing. Like, I just like betting too much, where only, like, if you're fucked in the head, like, you can battle with me.
Yeah.
And most people aren't fucked in the head, so, like, that's what I like, is that, like, they're just going to fold. Like, I just like that.
Yeah, I love it. Every time you show your cards, it makes me, like, hurt in my heart, though. Like, that was something I did, like, too much of in Mixed.
Yeah.
And I don't do at all in PLO.
Yeah.
I should never do it in Mixed because it's so hard to get someone to bet, like, to fold for, like, getting, like, fucking 14-1, you know what I mean? Which is something I really liked, is, like, trying to tell a story that will get someone to fold, getting, like, fucking 14-1, like, for, like, the minimum. I loved it, but I would just show all my bluffs. I'm like, God damn it, like, why'd I fucking do that?
I don't do it too much. I do it when I'm just, like, I need to, like, let them know once, like, just for, like, psychological reasons. It's a fucking...
I am not defeated, you motherfuckers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I respect it, and I've definitely been on that line, but every time, like, no, don't fucking show up, I don't deserve it. So poker, the very short of it is, I was doing a bunch of music and a bunch of promo work for various bands, and one band I was doing work for, their PR person, was listening to some stuff I was writing, and she was like, oh, there's this band Muse you might like. And at the time, music, like, Muse now is, like, this pop, is, like, really poppy, and, like, I'm really not into it. They, like, write, like, propaganda music for, like, 14-year-olds now. Like,
it's the band brutal. Muse?
Yeah. So, yeah. But back in the day, like, there was a lot of classical, and they, like, rocked out, and they would flail around, and it was just more intense and more, like, visceral and relatable and real, and less, like, pretending you're... guitar as a dick and like doing all the fucking like
rusty
right. shit.
They know? Do that
and, like,
now.
I can't fucking stand it. And well, anyhow, so I could relate to this band at the time. I'm like, oh fuck, this is great. And there was another band that I was friends with that were playing in a similar area when Muse were coming to the States. So I wound up meeting with Muse. I always wanted to be in the front of the lines when I go see a show, and so, like, at the time I was practicing, like, piano, like, 10 hours a day, and I'm, you know, like, I'm a fucking dork. So, like, I would bring my piano, my, like, my keyboard to the line, and I would just practice while I wait in line or whatever.
Yeah, that's...
yeah.
That, I think that's, like, very common. I used to keep my guitar with me, like, everywhere. Like, in my car, I'd just be, like, waiting for, like... When I was a delivery driver, like, waiting for a job, right? I would just be, like, writing songs.
So I love it.
I don't think it's that... I mean, maybe...
It's weird to set up, a keyboard in the front of a line, I guess. But, like...
I mean, it's whatever. Yeah. Like, who gives a shit?
Yeah. I'm definitely on board with that.
Yeah.
So, I'm, like, the person who waits in line for, like, 5 hours because I want to be up front. So, that's a good way to pass the time. And their bus pulled up. And at the time, we had all ordered pizza. Like, the front of the line ordered pizza. And... they get off the bus and they kind of look down at the keyboard and like walk away, whatever. So at the end of the show, they do like a meet and greet. If you buy the record, you can say hi to the band. And at this point, like it's not difficult for me to talk to these people because like I've been kind of integrated in this industry for a long time, for most of my childhood. Some weird experiences, but so like that wasn't really a thing. And also this is, I'm really hard on myself, so I feel like if I've done something I like it'll do well. And my networking was really strong, and the people who are willing to work with me are great musicians, and some are doing really well still. And I'm really sad I didn't take advantage of that relationship. Anyhow, so I'm in the back of this line, so I have the chance to kind of like. Talk a little bit more, and I get up to the front of the line and I see Matt, who's their singer, and I'm like, hey man, great show, like thanks so much for incorporating classical music into like rock and stuff. It's something that like really resonates with me and blah blah blah. And I was asking him if he knew about this cello rock band who were friends of mine who I just got finished singing in Detroit as well. Kind of tell him about them. He's like, oh, it sounds really cool. And he sees my tattoo, which is like a Chopin piece, or the start of a Chopin piece on the inside of my arm. And he asks me what piece this is. I tell him, he's like, oh, I fucking love that piece, blah, blah, blah.
What piece is it?
It's part of a... It's called Raindrops Prelude, I guess. there's an interesting story with it, and I guess the theme is that there's one note that's hit repeatedly
that's the raindrop.
That's supposed to simulate the raindrop, although yeah. like Chopin like dismisses it because he doesn't want to give something credit for what. Anyways, but yeah, that's the thing. So people call it the Raindrops Prelude. And if you find the right interpretation of it, it's really good. But if you find someone who plays it like bad, then it's really shit. Like, which is the interesting thing about classical music before like recordings existed. Like, it's up to the people interpreting the interpreting the sheet music to like play it the correct way. Like mm-hmm. you can play a really heavy song super fast and poppy, even though it's not supposed to be played that way, and it now fucking sucks.
Right.
But if you hear the right version of it, it's like really intense. So he asked me what piece this is. I tell him, and he's like, "Oh, I love that song." Blah blah blah. And their drummer Dom was like, "Weren't you the guy sitting outside playing the keyboard or whatever?" I'm mm-hmm. like, "Oh yeah, I'm an idiot. Whatever." So I'm like, "My girlfriend's supposed to be picking me up soon. I'm gonna stand outside and let you guys do your thing. If you feel like talking more, I'll be outside." I go wait outside, and they start packing their stuff up, and Matt sees me, and he's like, "Hey, Brandon, we're going to a bar. You want to come talk some?" I'm like, "Fuck yeah!" So, excuse me, I'm gonna take a sip of this.
Take a
flat
sip,
water
man.
In the baseball bat thing. And that was like, I'm not a sip pro yet. So I noticed I took a sip, and then I spoke, and then I re-sipped, and like you would just be, you know. Like, you know when the sip is done and you're ready to talk again. I'm like, amateur hour over here.
So
it's like fucking amateur hour here.
Sometimes if I start to lose train of thought, I'll sip and gather myself. Sometimes, like, if I think I delivered a zinger, I want to do one. But you're doing fine, man.
That's like, thank you. You're sip Yoda.
You're a natural sipper, man.
That was another thing that, like, you know, that, like, I loved the... So just backtracking a tiny bit,
sure.
one point of like interest to me was that we were both trying to make it again. By the time my last relationship ended, and crypto like did me in, and I got finished putting down my security deposit, like I was flat fucking broke.
Yeah.
So this is like the beginning of last year, and I'm like, okay, it's cool, you know, I'm in this place, you know, I pulled out my last Bitcoin at like 3,500 or whatever it was to put down my security deposit.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. And so, you know, we're both trying to get back in there, and then I'm listening to you, and like, you're like, let me take a sip of this. And I'm like, what is this thing? What is this shit? And I'm like, and then I started getting addicted to this sip. I'm like, dude, I'm like, yeah, take a fucking sip, man. I'm like, yeah, please. When's this guy gonna take a sip? Like, he wasn't taking a sip. And I know this is like the only way I can ever get my fix of a person saying, "Let me take a sip." So that was like my fucking thing. And then lately, and then this new season, you do this thing, you go, and if you're a patron. Thank you. I don't say it like that, but that's the way I think about it, and I always say it every time I say that. You're like, I haven't told you this yet, obviously, but like, yeah, like the end of the thing is like, and if you're a patron, thank you, and if you're not, well then I don't know what to tell you.
Oh, in the outro.
I like the I don't know what to tell you part because it's like I like it, but whenever you say like, and if you're a patron, I go, thank you, and I do like a little bow or whatever. I fucking love it. Anyways, so these are the things I look forward to like the most. Anyways, so backing up, so we're in this bar, and he's like, "So what are you doing with music?" And I'm kind of telling him about my ideas, and I really want to make this super intense experience that utilizes all the senses and like this progression of smells. Like maybe I associate this block of songs with like chimney smoke, and then, you know, then it progresses into whatever.
Wow, that's intense.
And like a lot of music and, you know, or a lot of movement, and like the songs are typically pretty intense. So there should be like, you know, you get like this, like the touch feeling, like the floor reverberating, like the people all around you, and I don't know, just whatever. And like, I was really into aesthetics, like color stuff and audio visual stuff and all these kind of things.
For shows or what?
Yeah.
For shows.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just want it to be like fucking sensory overload.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm telling about some of this stuff, and I'm asking him what he's doing. And he's talking about, this is for those who are fans of Muse, there's a, I think this is for, So, Absolution. Wait, fuck. It's been so long since I listened to him. Jesus Christ. Whatever the album is that has like the fucking Knights of Sidonia song on there or whatever, all that shit. They were doing I think it was the Absolution Tour. I think that was the name of the record. It was that was when I met them. And then the one after had like the Knights of Sidonia and Supermassive Black Hole, whatever. Anyhow, so he was like, for this record, you know, I want to do a lot of like 3-part harmonies and blah, blah, blah. And there's something called MIDI, which is like Matt plays guitar and piano. And when both of those need to be played at the same time, he'll step on a pedal called a MIDI pedal to trigger the guitar riff while he plays piano, because you can't do both at the same time, typically. So he's talking about having like all these 3-part harmonies and all this shit, and I'm like, oh, you know, are you planning on using MIDI, or are you going to recruit some more people or whatever? And I literally have zero agenda when I'm asking this. I was just asking. He's like, oh yeah, you know, like I think we're gonna have another we're gonna have another person. I'm like, oh cool, like what are you looking for, like you know, someone for piano or guitar or whatever? He's like, well, you. And he's like, I really believe in fate and destiny, and like I didn't want to go search for someone, and here you are, and we'd pay you real good, and you'd see the world and blah blah blah. And I'm like, what the fuck, you know, like my fucking like just
like, yeah, now you're in this band that you respect, just
insane,
it's big. Yeah,
yeah, it was just like insane. And I'm like, and I would do this shit for free just for the experience or whatever. But I'm like, hey, you know, I'm just like, let's, you know, keep in touch and, just talk a bit and get to know each other and see how that goes. And he was like, yeah, well, you know, we're going to be playing like the next 5 shows kind of in the Midwest. You and my girlfriend at the time, like you and Selena should come and hang out or whatever, and we'll get you on all the shows.
Just so the listener knows, I'm not panting at this story. I'm interested in it, but I'm not so interested that I'm panting. That's Brandon's husky, Lady, which is a really good and beautiful dog. But yeah. Lady loves this part of the story, so
she's here to help me cope with the rest of it, because it was a hard point. It was a hard point in my life for our 23-year-old Brandon had a hard time dealing with this. Thank you, Lady. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So anyhow,
how does this lead to poker?
Yeah. So they invited us to the next 5 shows, and then the next show they played was in Chicago. And after the show, he and I sat in the back of the bus, and he was like, he wanted to show me some like Gregorian chant music, which was pretty awesome. And he was like, hey, you ever play poker? I'm like, nah. And he's like, oh, you know, we've been playing it a bunch on the bus. And he's also kind of talking about how like the other two guys in the band were really reluctant to get a fourth member because they've been a 3-piece for so long, but ultimately like it's just something that you think, you know, they're gonna do. So we're like exchanging life stories in the back of this bus while like Gregorian chant music is playing, and I'm learning how to play poker, like Texas Hold'em or whatever.
Yeah.
And obviously
what year was this? Was this like during the boom or no?
I'm gonna guess it was like 2004 2005.
Oh, so it was right at the beginning of the boom. Like, yeah. So you're playing No Limit Hold'em.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, so like the boom caught them for sure.
How was that game with the guys from Muse?
Well, it was just me and Matt. So we were just, and I wasn't paying it. I was just like trying to. I still can't really play poker and talk that well. You know what I mean? I try. Mm-hmm. I want to have a good time at the table or whatever.
Right.
But like, I have a hard time with it, and I definitely didn't know what I was doing. I know I won. I have no idea how I won. I just remember being the winner. I don't nice. Fucking yeah. So. You know,
and were you hooked after that first experience?
No, I just figured by the end of it, we all exchanged contact information, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm gonna head home and start working on your music. And while I did that, I figured I would learn how to play poker, because that's what they did. That was their like bonding aesthetic, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And I don't want them to see me as some person trying to infiltrate their band, because like I'm definitely not. Like, I'm very happy with the project that I'm working on, and I was really working hard, and I had like a really good group of people. I mean, this is an insane opportunity, so like will 100% jump at it, and like they'd become one of my favorite bands. So like, I mean, just kind of mind-blowing. But I never, ever wanted to play in someone else's band. I always had my own project. You know, I just wanted them to see that, you know, I'm not trying to infiltrate their band. I'm just happy meeting like-minded people.
Yeah.
And working on my own thing or whatever. But I figured I would learn since that's what they did for fun. So I just went home and started, like, learning about poker stuff.
Did you dive all the way in, or you just kind of learned a little bit?
No, I went and, like, I started researching. I remember, like, it's funny, I went on Kazaa. You know Kazaa?
I don't remember. What's that?
Like LimeWire.
You remember LimeWire? Oh, yeah. I do remember LimeWire. Okay. Yeah.
So it was like one of those kind of things, like a torrent kind of thing.
Hi, or lady. File sharing thing. Hi.
Ladies jumping. Ladies jumping up on DJF.
How are you? You're a good dog.
You're next week's guest.
Yeah.
You're next
week's I'll get guest. Your story next week, okay? Yeah. All right.
I remember I downloaded a strategy thing off Kazaa, and it was like... It was all about, like, how these sites are rigged, and, like, it would be, like, what you need to do is need to map the hands. Every time you win a hand, you make, like, a check mark, and every time you lose a hand, you make an X, and you start following the patterns of the hands you win and lose, and if you get aces, proceed with caution, because this is how, like, the website's going to try to get you to, like...
Holy shit. Your,
it was crazy. So I remember I was like fucking, I have my paper out, and every time I'd win a hand, I'd do a check mark, and I'd try to like analyze my pattern and pick what hands I played. Yeah, that lasted like a couple days.
Jesus.
But that was the literature back then. It was really, really strong.
And how do you, what were the two events you won at the World Series? I know they're PLO, but what were the buy-ins?
2014 1500 PLO, and then 2016 10K PLO.
10K PLO is the big one, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's been a really good event for me historically, definitely.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Sure. How do we get from like, oh, I'm gonna learn this, and then I'm gonna start studying patterns? Which
Sorry, go ahead.
No, and then how do we get to, oh, I'm just gonna play against all the best PLO players in the world and just take down the bracelet?
So the Muse thing falls through, and the guy just winds up kind of being full of shit and keeps like, hey, we want to have you come out here, and then like ghost. And then like I'm like, look, dude, I'm a big boy. I can handle yes, no. I just need to know what I'm doing with my life. And he's like, no, well, we're going to blah, blah, blah. You know, just keep kind of like dangling the carrot and then like take it away. And I'm like a young kid, and like I didn't ask for any of this, and I didn't handle the rejection especially well.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't even rejection. I just didn't like, just the ghosting, I guess. Yeah. I don't fucking know. So, or realizing this guy was full of shit. I just really wanted nothing to do with music. So, I grinded. I joined 2+2. I was just playing a lot, like really bad. Really like a lot of limping, really passive, short stacking, 5-10, no limit. And like, I wouldn't rat hole. I would just like play until like I felt like I had no momentum, and then I would leave.
Mm-hmm.
And I was making like $1,000 a day, and it was fucking insane to me.
Online?
Yeah, but it lasted like a month and a half, and then the NetTeller thing kicked in.
Mm.
NetTeller got indicted for something, and everybody's money on Full Tilt was frozen.
Right.
And I had all my money on Full Tilt, except for like a very small bankroll for short stacking 5-10 no limit. Which was like fucking 3K or something like that.
On what site was that?
Full Tilt. Yeah.
Wait, you said you had all your money on Full Tilt except for short stacking 5-10 live?
Oh, no. I had all my money in NetTeller.
Oh, in NetTeller. Okay.
I didn't want to see it physically. I didn't put it in banks or anything because I just wanted to pretend it didn't exist, because this is like insane. Like, I'd never made this much money.
Right.
And I was working as a server. I worked at a server from like 15 until like my mid 20s or something like that, various places. And I was making more money doing this than waiting tables. And then the NetTeller thing happened, and I like busted my little mini roll online. And then I started, and so I was broke again, while NetTeller had my money frozen. So I started like, so I couldn't bring myself to play no limit. I was just like, fuck, I don't want to rebuild playing No Limit again, even though it wasn't much of one, I guess. I don't know. I just figured I'd learn some new games. So I'd try to pay my rent with a new game every month. Like, I would start with $5, try to pay my rent, like playing Raz,
learning a new game,
yeah, and then Stud or whatever. So that's kind of how mixed games came about. And I kind of got back on my feet again after a while, and then Black Friday came, and all my role was on Full Tilt still again. Mm-hmm. I didn't learn my fucking lesson. Yeah. So money was frozen again. Briefly moved to Montreal, and then to play online. Then moved back to California, back to Chicago. Got invited to Steve Albini. It's like people who are familiar with myself or Steve's poker career. We've probably heard of one another through through one of us talking about our poker stuff, because we're pretty attached to the hip when it comes to live stuff.
Steve Albini, a music producer?
Correct.
He produced In Utero from Nirvana, is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
And a bunch of other, like...
Yeah, it's everything.
Amazing, like, albums, yeah.
Just insane. And, like, as far as, like, business ethics go, I mean... What, like, couldn't be a better example. If you wanna have to work until you die, and also if you wanna run an ethical business, I suppose.
Right.
He refuses to be a leech on artists' music. Will not take a commission. Just wants to be, you know, paid. Like, he could be set for life.
He's but an, like, idealist. Sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is your guys' music. I don't want to be attached to it. You hired me for the service, and it's such a beautiful thing. And his relationships are similar. Like, I'm not used to people doing things for me. When you bought me that birthday dinner, mm-hmm. I sat there and thank the heavens, like, for the two of you for, like, you know, like a week straight until I felt, you know, I didn't have to, you know, anyways, I'm not used to these things. And Steve is like, has always looked out for everybody I know, especially me. And it has also, he invited me to my first home game live, invited me to come to Vegas for the first time, invited me to come to World Series for the first time. All my firsts as far as, like, poker stuff is concerned has pretty much been through him. And there was a point where I was going for Player of the Year in 2014, and my lease had ended, and I didn't want to move in between this time, so I just lived at the recording studio for a few months. I mean, best times of my life. Like,
yeah,
all these great bands and everyone who comes through there, like, it's like your podcast, pretty much, you know what I mean? It's that your podcast attracts certain people, and the people who don't meet that criteria get weeded out really fucking quick.
Right.
And it's very similar at his place. Like, his place attracts, you know, good people who have good intentions, and they're communal, and, you know, they want to share things, and, you know,
his place in Chicago, his studio?
Recording studio. Yeah. I mean, it's like it's a fucking compound. It's like, it's insane.
Yeah.
And this piano is actually from there, which is, so I'll, like, drag that with me until I die. They got a grant for a new piano, and he's like, dude, you gotta have this piano. So, I mean, there's like 40 years or whatever of musical history on that piano.
Oh, really?
It's insane. Yeah.
Damn.
That's cool. I mean, really, really cool of him. So, yeah, that was kind of my foray into live stuff. He took me to the Horseshoe in Hammond, started playing live there, and did some home games with him, and really enjoyed the live aesthetic.
What was your first? So, in 2014, you won a bracelet. What was that like? A lot of listeners, like, you know, that's the dream. That's their dream still in poker, is to win a bracelet, and you've done it twice. What was the first one like in a $1,500 event, which is probably a pretty big field?
Yeah, at the time it was At the time it was you bring up, like, a few really good points that are very relevant to this story in particular. I'm going through puberty, like, on
it's about time, man.
I know, I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
Congrats.
Thank you. The one I won was the largest no limit hold'em event at the time that had existed. It was the largest PLO field or whatever. So that was kind of neat. But I have a major respect for people who can nurse a short stack. It's something you know, tournaments are kind of about,
yeah,
you have one life.
Yeah.
And it really, I know really good players who will just like punt off their last blah, blah, blah. And, I don't know, just, it's something I take really seriously. And there was another guy in the field, named Morgan Popham, who's a PLO player. And he did such a great job nursing the short stack, during like the final, four tables, really. He was like super short and he wound up heads up with me. And I had him out chipped by a lot. We wound up getting it in with, he had aces and I had kings, but I had an ace blocker.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of standard, but like I wind up sucking out on him to win. And at the time, like when I won, I mean, it was the first event of the series, which is great for my series. But I felt bad for this guy. You know, I watched him like nurse a short stack and he got his money in good. And
he stood up second place though.
Yeah, but like, I mean, it was like anticlimactic way to win. And then also like Raz was going and I wanted to make sure I got in Raz. And also like the guy who came to greet me when I won called me by somebody else's name. Like the guy who was like the featured player at the table was mm-hmm. Steve Bilariakis.
No, I know him.
Yeah, of course. Mr. Yeah. Smokey.
Yeah.
He was going for his like third or fourth bracelet or something, and then he busted like fourth or fifth. And Nolan came up after I won, and he's like, "Steve, my man." He's like, "Number three, man." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, yeah." And he's like,
"With a microphone?"
No. Just, okay. With his tape recorder.
Oh yeah. For like poker or something?
Yeah, for like the post interview, yeah. You know.
That's great.
Whatever. He's like, "Man, how does it feel? You know, I think we were standing in this exact spot when you won bracelet number one."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Okay." You know, yeah. Like, okay. And someone comes up behind him, they're like, "You know, his name is Brandon.
Yeah.
His name is not Steve. This is his first bracelet." And he's like, "Oh, I'm so sorry, blah, blah, blah." I didn't care. I was just kind of like processing everything. Felt bad for this kid. Raz is coming up. This dude is calling me by somebody else's name. I don't know what the fuck he's talking about.
So it wasn't like, that. It wasn't.
It was
what it would be for many people when they win a bracelet.
Yeah, and honestly, at the time, I didn't really care about like bracelets. I guess like I love the competition. Like I play literally no tournaments throughout the year. I just grind cash because like when World Series comes, I want to fucking compete with everybody, and I want the tournament series to be a reprieve from the cash game grind.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want...
That makes sense.
Yeah, I don't want to like burn myself out playing a bunch of tournaments. So I just like, I want this to be fun. So I love that part, but I didn't care about a bracelet. I mean, they're, you know, they're kind of fucking ugly and just whatever. But Chad Brown...
Yeah, I remember Chad Brown.
You ever play with Chad?
I think I used to just like see him at the limit tables.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't sure if you ever played Nolan with him, but yeah, he was predominantly a limit guy.
Played much no limit, but yeah, I do remember. Yeah. And everyone had good things to say about him. And
yeah, like quintessential way to handle yourself at a table. Never had a bad thing to say about anybody. Always took his beats like really well.
Yeah.
I attended his funeral in 2014. And they kind of talked about the story, you know, how he really wanted to win a bracelet. Like, you know, he went his whole career just trying to win a bracelet and how much it meant to him and all these kind of things. And then, I think he fought off cancer and then it came back and got him again. And they came to him, in the hospital and kind of awarded him, a bracelet, like, a
lifetime achievement.
Yeah, maybe? Something like that. Yeah. And I thought that was like a really nice gesture. And then I started thinking about like our home game and like there are a couple guys who also have that dream. You know, my old Italian lawyer friend.
A lot of people have that dream to win a bracelet.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it was hearing the Chad Brown story and then like thinking about like Petey Sweetie, like my old Italian lawyer, like the fucking funniest person ever to listen to talk about how cool it would be and blah, blah, blah. All these kind of things. And I'm like, you know, like I really took this experience for granted.
Right.
In a lot of ways. Yeah. So when 2016 came around, I got my money in good. It was against somebody I really respect. Heads up, and he's gotten the better of me as well.
Who's that?
His name's Lauren Klein. He took a lot of shit for wearing like a MAGA hat.
I know who it is.
Yeah. But and his reasons, I don't know, like, whatever. I'm not gonna like go into his reasons, but I know him away from the table, and I know his character, and he is really, I mean, he's a really good person. And and it's interesting because literally every single time we've been at the table together, like, we've been at the table together 5 times. Only 5 times have we ever sat at a table together, and each time one of us has won a bracelet.
Oh, wow.
Like, guaranteed to win a bracelet. Like, it's fucking crazy.
That's pretty strong.
Yeah, we're 5 of 5 of, like, if we ever get sat at a table together, like, one of us wins that event. So, it's pretty crazy. He's got 4 bracelets. We were at the same table 3 times, and he won 3, and then me twice. So,
what was that one like? The 10K, like, so you won the 1500, and you were underwhelmed. Well, 10K is the biggest one. It's like the main event, except for PLO. Did this one, and you have this new perspective on what a bracelet means to so many other people.
Yeah.
How'd this one hit you?
Yeah, this one, I made it a point to kind of soak in the moment. There were more people around as well to kind of watch. The field was really tough. There were a lot of, like, really good players who I respect at the table. And I understand, I had a, the way I valued the bracelet was different, obviously. So everything lined up in a way where I made it a point to be in that moment and, you know, definitely appreciate it. Yeah, because, yeah, I mean, they are hard to come by. And I have a lot of, like, seconds that really haunt me. So definitely appreciated that a lot more. And
you have a lot of second place finishes that haunt you?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 50K being the biggest one, but the Players Championship is like the mixed game. That's like the real main event for mixed game players.
Right. You got second in that thing?
Yeah, in 2014.
Wow.
And then also, and I got second in the 10K Raz in 2014 as well. And Raz is my favorite event. And then, so I was like a lock to win that one, kind of, like, in theory, because all I did was battle heads up Raz and cash. That was like my main game. And so I lost that. And then, like, the 50K, I lost to Hennigan, who should beat me for sure. And he was definitely
the best. I heard he's amazing.
Yeah, he's fucking great.
That's, what's his name, his nickname?
World, Johnny World.
Johnny World, yeah.
Yeah. He is a commerce guy, or he was around.
Yeah, no, I'd always see him, but he was in the, you know, one table away.
Yeah.
So we're about at time, but we should definitely do another one soon. Do you think we should do it like after this World Series of Poker and just get like a rundown of what you're gonna play a bunch of events this year, right?
Yeah. I'm playing like the full schedule.
Okay.
Whenever you want, dude. Yeah. I don't want you to lose a whole bunch of followers because of me. That's all, because they're sick of listening to
my ass. I don't think I'll lose a whole bunch. Okay. But, so the last thing I want to... Well, first of all, if people want to read your writing, they go to Brandon Shaq hyphen Harris.
No hyphen.
Yeah. Okay, BrandonShaqHarris.com /muse, right?
Well, that's just for the muse story. Just go to my site. It's probably /blog for the blog, but there's a whole bunch of different shit on that website.
What's your Twitter if people want to follow you?
It's oscillator_WSOP. So
oscillator_WSOP.
Yeah.
And the reason I asked that is because you actually do post a lot of interesting stuff on Twitter, projects and your writings and stuff. So
appreciate it.
I recommend people do that. This week of sessions, so each week, as you know, has its own theme, and this week, which hasn't been released yet, so you haven't heard it yet, it's called I Don't Belong, and something crystallized for me that should have been super obvious, and I kind of always knew it, but I just never really just said it, is that most of us that are in the poker world, like, long term, it's because we don't belong in the real world. Like, we don't belong in the rat race. Mm-hmm. And so when I was thinking who would be a good interview, for this week, I thought of you. And I thought of, like, well, this guy doesn't belong in any mainstream thing. Just give us, I just put you on the spot, but just give us, like, a few thoughts on that. If you agree with that, if it's stupid, or whatever you think, and then yeah, we'll wrap it up.
No, I think I appreciate that, and I can definitely relate to that. And it's interesting because when people do talk about pursuing poker, I'll always say, like, well, for me, you know, if you have reasonable study habits or whatever, you don't mind putting in some work, and you can, and I guess it's easier to kind of understand and go through, like, the learning curve of some of the, I guess you call them, like, soft skill kind of things nowadays, yeah, relative to how it was back when we were coming up, where, like, you know, there was a decent chance your poker guide was going to be like the dude who'd be like, oh, come on, Eggy, like, if things are going bad, then just change your seat and have the dealer wash the deck. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah, now you can get, like, some legit advice,
yeah,
from a whole bunch of people. So you can kind of, like, it helps you kind of expedite, like, the learning curves as far as, like, soft skill things are concerned. If you have these abilities, I would say, like, if you want to be a poker professional and it's between, like, working in poker or working, like, a 9-to-5, then by all means pursue it. If it's between poker and, like, pursuing your dream in music, you should probably do the music thing. Right. Because the learning curve of poker is just insane and can be extremely unforgiving. And there are just so many lessons learned. And it's interesting when it starts getting to, like, this point of, like, sunk cost where you're like, fuck, like, do I really need to walk away from this thing? I literally just learned how not to get scammed anymore, how not to get my money seized from the government anymore.
Yeah.
How to play pre-flop. And then, like, just all the, yeah, you think you're just trying to learn how to beat a game, but, like, then you realize you're learning how to, like, deal with losing. Like, I worked my fucking ass off all year last year and grinded insane hours and fortunately did well, although I did play staked. Mm-hmm. So, like I had an extremely good year by, you know, if it were just me. But, you know, I wound up giving a bunch of that away, which is kind of my MO.
Yeah.
What was the point? So you think, like, you're just learning how to beat the game, but, like, you realize, like, you have to learn how to, oh yeah, that's what I was going to say, is I had a really good year, but, like, I lost, you know, 48, I won 52% of my sessions.
Right.
Like, you lose a fucking lot.
Which can be, yeah.
Yeah. You, like, no matter how, like, I did really well, but I lost a lot.
Right.
And then, like, so you have to learn how to get used to losing and then how to cope with that in productive ways. Then you have to learn how to not get scammed by so many different people in game, people you think are your friends. You have to learn about the loaning money situation. You have to learn about balancing your life and just, like, I don't know. I mean, it's so brutal. So, like, my thing is, I guess if you have other dreams or ambitions you're really passionate about, like, I'm not that great at prioritizing. There's just a massive learning curve to the poker thing. I would say explore those. But between, like, the 9-to-5 thing, yeah, like, I don't want to go sit behind a desk. It's just not for me.
Well, some people can't. So, yeah, yeah. I've been for a long time, because I've been in the game for a long, I've been, yeah, telling people, no, it's not for anyone. Don't make it your career. And then I've kind of just realized, like, well, some people just can't do the 9-to-5, and myself included, right? And you, mm-hmm, as well. Yeah. And, like, so some of us just don't belong, and then just fucking go on the ride, right? Have all the money, be broke, mm-hmm, get scammed, meet the best people, meet the worst people, and then, you know, and then end up, you know, talking about it into a microphone down the road.
Yeah, and you realize that you're doing it, like, you're, everything you're doing, you need to, especially in this industry, you need to realize you're doing 100% for you and for, like, the people who will always have your back and who are, like, willing to stand by this industry for the right reasons, and you just don't want to turn your back on these people, because, like, the industry doesn't give a fuck about you. These people don't give a fuck about you, which was kind of, like, the whole theme behind the World Series of Dick Sucking, I guess.
Yeah.
Was the theme being, like, everybody talking about like how great everybody is in front of them, and then as soon as like you turn around, like they sit there and shit talk you.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, you know, I've played with so-and-so for like five hands, and he played one hand bad, and like he's the worst player of all time.
Oh yeah.
So that's where that kind of stemmed from, I suppose. It was like, I'm at World Series and everyone's like, oh, this is so-and-so. He's the greatest player ever. And you're great. Oh no, you're great.
Yeah.
And then like, as soon as like it's over, it's like, oh my God, fucking bad. Yeah. You're terrible. You're like, everyone's the worst. But yeah, I mean, you know, if you can detach your ego, you know, there's some really great people in here too. And it's nice to meet like people I relate to, like you, who will go out of your way for everybody and kind of put yourself last and take the worst of it, and you just want to have a good time. And you know, we just want to like be able to do what we want to do and live our lives without being told what to do and share the wealth, I guess.
Yeah.
That's something I really appreciate you. So,
well, thanks for coming on, man. And we'll do another one after the World Series this year, and let's have another big year. Let's have another bracelet, another heartbreaking second place. Just some good shit to talk about, right?
Yeah, we'll fucking crush it this year.
Right. Thanks, bro. Thanks a lot. I hope you enjoyed this drop of Sessions. If you are a patron, thank you. And if you're not a patron, well, I don't know what to tell you. Huh? Princess, I'm doing the outro. And that's a lot of stuff. Princess, I know, we're trying. Larger than life. I guess I'm gonna need some help then. Princess, I hope the listeners go to patreon.com/DGAF poker player. Cause otherwise.